This program is made possible thanks to the generosity of our listeners. Show your support at heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
This week on Meet in Three, we look at the ways indoor and outdoor spaces are being reconceptualized during the pandemic to better suit new modes of living, working, and eating.
It's brought a vibrancy and an energy back to the city streets that were so dearly missed during the height of the pandemic.
This is about how we can grow indoors all year round using proprietary technology that we've developed.
How do I have someone understand, look, don't take a next to the June berries because you can eat those. That's free food.
Tune in to Meet in Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
Oh, you know, I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Man, so many balls in the air, so much juggling going on. It's a difficult and emotional time. We are planning to have a friends and family opening to the new iteration of Amore Amargo, which is just an expansion. The original Amore Amargo is still alive and kicking for now. This weekend, so starting Friday and Saturday. And additionally, because, of course, we had to close Mother of Pearl permanently, as well as my beloved Honeybee's All-American Whiskey Bar permanently, we are doing a sale right now to bolster our bottom line. We're selling all of the inventory because New York State's restrictions are relaxed on that. So we can operate as a bottle shop, basically like a liquor store. So if anyone listening in the New York area wants to pick up some bottles, go to amoreamargo.com. And then there's under the menu, there's a spot that says order online. And it's got an entire list of our inventory from both Mother of Pearl, lots of cool rums, some standard stock items, of course, and a lot of real gems in there, a lot of Foursquare stuff. And similarly, Honey Bees is selling all of its All-American whiskeys. So again, a lot of stock items in there, but several cool ass gems in there for competitive prices. We just started the sale yesterday. It's taking off really well. It's really going to help fortify us through what we perceive is going to be a pretty difficult winter. So,
yeah, man. I mean, does it at least feel nice to be busy again? Like, I mean, forward momentum has been in such short supply these last 7 months, and you know, I mean, we're bar people. We're not truly happy unless we're stressed out all the time and constantly busy. What is it like basically to be back and moving towards a goal again, which is something that I don't feel like a lot of us have done for a really long time?
There are parts of it that feel quite good. The sort of literal moving of the body in a sense of being busy. You know, we've been doing outdoor service since we've been allowed to do that. And frankly, the word busy never really surfaces. You know, we've now just taken to saying, you know, busy for COVID, which is still, we're taking in on any given night half of the revenue that we would take in on that same night pre-COVID. So 50% revenue. Sadly, because of the nature of it, it takes us at least three times the labor to accomplish half the revenue. So it's a model that simply doesn't work. You know, we're sinking. We're just sinking slowly. I keep saying, you know, a lot of my colleagues and I keep saying it was just a race to see who fails the slowest. And we've done this crazy Hail Mary at Amore Amargo to expand into the space next door and create a retail store and a secondary bar that's reservation only. But we feel that it's the new space is very conducive to the climate right now. You know, of course, it's built for social distancing currently, and the model that we're going to operate it under, we feel, is built for, you know, somewhat social distancing forever. It's going to be reservation only. It's very spaced out. It's, you know, prefix, so you can pay in advance, and it's going to be a unique experience. And then the store out front can now operate at least until the restrictions are closed down. Can operate as a bottle shop, so we can sell Amaros and spirits. We're still selling, of course, books, barware, and bitters. We've got bottled cocktails that we make. Several of our, standards at Amore Amargo, the Adamaro Sazerac, the Sharpie Mustache, and the DiPalmo. And then, of course, we're doing classics, the Old Fashioned, the Manhattan, the Negroni, some custom ones based on menu and availability of product. So, you know, the shop is beautiful. I posted photos of that on my Instagram. You can go check them out. It's Creative Drunk, or at Amore Margo's Instagram. And yeah, so second phase of that is to get the bar open, which we're calling Amore Reserve or Reserve at Amore. I'm not sure how we're wording it exactly yet. We'll figure all that as we go. But yeah, to be in motion a lot for basically we're getting these orders, which are, came at us a lot faster than I expected, frankly. We're getting these orders, running down into the you know, liquor room in the basement, bringing them up and sort of lining them up on a shelf with names, and then people are coming to pick them up, and it's great. You know, it's good to have people come in and say, "Hey, I bought a few bottles just to support you." You know, especially a lot of, again, a lot of the items what we had lying around, of course, when we were unexpectedly closed, are just stock items. But people are like, "I'd rather buy it from you than buy it from, you know, my local liquor store, because the liquor store's been, you know, really getting a lot of my money over the course of COVID, and I haven't gotten to give any of it to you." So, trying to spread the wealth. You know, of course, we're not rooting for any liquor stores to go down, but we're rooting for ourselves to stay up. So yeah, there's something satisfying to be, you know, "Hey, we got another order, run downstairs and pick it up." You know, we did a little over $4,000 in bottle sales just yesterday after we launched this thing. So and then, you know, on there you can schedule when you're picking up, so we've already got people scheduled to pick up all the way through the weekend. So it's pretty gratifying to know that you've got people out there that are supporting you.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're certainly coming into a, it's gonna be a weird weekend. Traditionally, it's a big drinking weekend. You know, people will probably still be doing that for a lot of reasons this year. But I actually, related to that, I'm so used to asking questions of our guests. I actually have a question I would like to pose to our listeners, because I'm doing a little research for a Facebook Live event that I'm doing this Friday. I'm super excited. I'm doing it as sort of a closing night party for a Commedia dell'arte troupe here in my hometown of Washington, D.C. And Commedia dell'arte is a very ancient and cool art form from Italy. It's a lot of slapstick. It's a lot of broad physical comedy. It's very funny. It's very ribald, and it's really is kind of the basis for a lot of, you know, the Three Stooges, Marx Brothers, Bugs Bunny humor that exists today. But I'm hosting a little party for them because they've been doing an online series all summer, and the last one is this coming Friday, right before Halloween. And so I started, you know, doing a little research. I wanted to do something about apple brandy, about, you know, the history of that distillation, some of the drinks. I'm going to be running a contest where I have a drink that I've been making for years with Calvados that I love, but I've never come up with a name for it. So there's going to be a cool contest where you can name the drink and win some sweet swag. But the question that I have, I've been looking into this a little bit because it's spooky season and because I'm looking at the history of, you know, distillation and fermentation in the United States. And a lot of that for many centuries was done primarily by women and not by men. And I remember reading a few years ago, and this deserves a great big Wikipedia citation needed on it. I remember reading a few years ago that the image that we have of witches with the tall hats and the brooms and the cats comes from women brewers in Europe, because tall hats were sort of the trademark of people that worked in the brewing arts. The broom was used to, you know, keep the place clean, but also to stir the wort, and the cats kept the mice out of eating all the grain. And the thing that I'm curious about, if any linguistic whizzes listen to the show, is the Spanish word for witch is bruja, which sounds a lot like brewing and brewery. And granted, there are lots of words out there that sound like other words and have nothing to do with them. But if anyone can let us know if those are the same, like come from the same root word, that would be awesome, because I'm a huge nerd and I'm really curious about this.
Yeah, seems logical, right?
It does. It does.
I'll ask Natalie. Maybe she knows. You know, she and her partner used to run a company called Bruja Collective, so maybe she's got some insight on the name.
Ah, interesting. See, I mean, you know, listeners feel free to chime in, but the one listener I've got right here might already have a lead on it.
Yeah, it all comes together, buddy. Yeah. Well, speaking of ladies in the brewing distilling arts, who's our guest today, Greg?
Oh, today we are super lucky. Joining us from... I actually don't know where you're joining us from, but I know that you're originally from Queens in New York City. We have Bridget Fertle, who is the founder of Oni's Rum and more recently the founder of Rockaway Seltzer. Bridget, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's awesome to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, where are you right now? Are you in the Rockaways?
I am not. I'm in Manhattan right now, but I'm headed to Rockaway tomorrow. So
yeah.
Kind of like splitting, you know, my whole family's still in Rockaway.
Of course.
Go and spend like half the week with my mom in her big old house, which is awesome and close to the beach. So like to temporarily anyway have the best of both worlds, even though it's the upside down world of Manhattan. And Souther, your little intro there really was tearing at my heartstrings.
Yeah, it's tough. I kind of gave up the veneer of trying to make people think it wasn't tough. It's tough.
Yeah.
An easy, quick piece about me, and then I want to talk about you. It's your show. But, back in January, I was a partner in five different bars. Today, I have one. That's a dramatic change for just 10 months. And frankly, that happened, you know, several months ago. We made those decisions. So, yeah, it's not cool. But let's talk about you. You are a pretty fascinating person. You carry an MBA, and you worked on Wall Street for a while. But you worked in consumer goods and focusing a lot on global alcoholic beverage brands. Talk about that a little bit, and then we'll whittle our way to how you went from that to rum to seltzer.
Yeah, it's been an interesting, 10, 15 years, whatever it's been. My whole family has been in small business, so I definitely have like that entrepreneurial spirit in my blood, and they kind of directed me towards business school. Came a little bit naturally to me. So after undergrad and grad business school with focuses in finance, went and got a job at a hedge fund as a research analyst and investor, hired onto their consumer goods team and wound up developing a niche in global alcoholic beverages for the fund. So it was just something I like to eat and drink. And, the investments are pretty, good returns, good brands, good cash flow, all of those things from the big publicly traded guys anyway. And, I had spent about 5 years doing that and kind of hit a wall from a growth perspective personally and professionally at the fund. And I was looking into getting into investing on the smaller scale with startups and small businesses and just basically doing some soul searching on what was next. And, just opening up my mind, coming up for air and opening my mind up to potential new avenues of growth. And I guess over those like 6 to 8 months, whatever it was, of networking and interviewing and thinking, I kind of had this aha moment while sitting at my desk at the hedge fund watching a TED talk. And it was given by a professor at Stanford to MBA students talking about venture capital. And basically his thesis was, what gives you the credibility to make investment decisions on startups when you've never, started a business or operated a business or you have no idea what it's like? Get out there, don't be afraid to fail, start a business, and then come back to venture capital, with that experience, and you'll be so much more valuable. And it kind of just like literally, it's kind of like silly to say out loud, but it really was in retrospect like this aha moment where all of these like thoughts over the past like previous six to eight months amalgamated in like, I'm going to bring rum distilling back to my hometown of New York. And of course, that was like from watching the trends in the resurgence of American distilling and loving rum and thinking that there was an opportunity and there was a lack of American rum production occurring, and the history of rum, especially in New York City, first distillery on record, as you guys know, in present day Staten Island in the 1660s. I was like, I'm young, I have some savings, I'm gonna like ditch my apartment in Manhattan, move back with my parents and like build a distillery and just like go for it. And like, you know, whatever, if it doesn't work, I can always just fall back on Wall Street again. So yeah, that was at the end of 2011. I packed up my apartment and moved back to Rockaway in Queens. I was supposed to be for a year. I think I lived there for 4 years before having enough money to move back out and get my own place again. It was me alone for the first couple of years there. Built a distillery on the east side of Williamsburg in Brooklyn and made a rum called Oni's, which I, you know, the vision was to make a funky, unique white rum using interesting fermentation methods. And that, you know, kind of led to a big strategic distribution partnership in 2017 with Proximo Spirits. And then
I feel like that relationship had to be born out of your, you know, business savvy, right?
It definitely was. I kind of came, and I'm sure you guys have discussed this in various ways over the years on this show, but came to this hard realization that I really wanted Oni's to be a national brand. I still do, of course. And I, as an independent sort of one SKU company, you know, was like, I can't do this by running around hand selling by myself. I have no power in a market that, you know, is a three-tier system with big, big suppliers and big, big distributors, and I need some strength behind me. So I was a kind of at a crossroads, like, do I go out and try to raise like a tremendous amount of money and execute, you know, build a real sales and marketing force in-house, which would probably never be profitable. It would just bump the number, you know, use that capital to burn the cash, bump the volume numbers up, and then eventually probably lead to a sale. Or do I find some sort of broker or strategic, you know, partner? And that kind of happened over the course of, you know, came to that realization kind of at the end of 2015, beginning of 2016, and then spent all of 2016 exploring options and came to what I found to be the best opportunity for the company and the brand by March of 2017 with Proximo Spirits. So yeah, I think it was part of business savvy and part of what I had envisioned for the brand. You know, there are plenty of small distilleries around the country that focus regionally, or they do a tremendous tasting room business, but I really wanted to market and sell this, you know, outside of just, you know, New York City.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to just sell in your own backyard. You want to get it out there. You want to get the message out there.
Yeah.
Well, man, that all sounds incredible. And then now you've shifted gears tremendously. I'd like to mention in here somewhere that, of course, right about that same time that Oni's was kicking off and you were getting it underway, Forbes recognized you as one of their 30 under 30. Zagat recognized you as one of their 30 under 30. You were on Vibe 75 people to watch list. Like, you're a powerful force out there, right? You're laughing because it's embarrassing when someone talks about your accomplishments, right?
It is. And it honestly, like, it was something that I and a lot of, you know, again, this is kind of like business school 101. Like, I saved my original business plan because nothing in life personally or professionally ever goes as planned. But especially like when you're writing that initial business plan for the vision, a lot of the vision, the original vision came to fruition, but I had never in a million years, probably like naively, thought about press. And, you know, I called this, you know, rum Oni's because I was enamored with the history of rum running, and Oni had an estate in Rockaway, again, my love for my hometown of Rockaway Beach, Queens. And I wanted to incorporate rum running history and smuggling rum in from Havana and all of this stuff. And like, ultimately from the get-go, the story really became about me. And I, you know, there was no PR agency involved. I think I had a friend at the time at Gothamist who wrote like one little blurb, and then that built on it on itself. And it was like, whoa. So definitely super grateful and clearly embarrassed about all of that stuff. But it was definitely important for, you know, wound up being imperative for getting the brand out there and the recognition and the credibility to get it to a point that it got to, that it's going to hopefully even go way beyond, you know, anything I, you know, got it to.
Yeah. Well, this seems like a good spot to stop in your story and take a pause and hear from our sponsors here at Heritage Radio Network. We're going to come right back and keep talking to Bridget Fertel about seltzer. Stay tuned.
All of us at HRN have been keeping busy, despite working and recording from home. This fall, we're proud to announce new shows on the network that each bring important and enlightening stories to listeners around the world. While the world is in turmoil and the future of our country is uncertain, there are certain constants that help keep us going. For us, food and storytelling are essential. While we can't come together in person, food podcasts from HRN provide a virtual table we can all gather around. Bringing exceptional stories to your ears and keeping you informed on the ever-changing political and environmental issues of our time is integral to our mission. At a time when the world around us is rapidly changing, HRN is committed to being here for our listening community, and we need you to be here for us. Join our table and help ensure the future of food radio by becoming a member of HRN. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to make a contribution. Check out the latest additions to our lineup while you're there. You can see all of our series at heritageradionetwork.org/new show.
And we're back. You were listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. Joining us today, we have Bridget Fertel. Before the break, we were talking about your rise to beverage stardom with Oni's Rum. And now let's talk a little bit about the pivot to making a non-alcoholic seltzer that's further ingrained in the history of where you're from. And when you were talking about a little bit before the break about saying the company, you were kind of walking us through the, I'm sure, difficult decision of like, what do I want the future of this brand to be and what do I want my future to be? And I wanted to ask you, how much of, was there a sense of, you know, I want a new challenge. I want to do something different. Like, I don't, if I leave this, it didn't seem to me like I'm going to go out and do another rum ever entered your head. You wanted the chance to do something that you hadn't done before and push yourself. Was my read right on that?
For sure. I mean, as we were just talking about, we solidified the strategic partnership and distribution relationship with Proximo in 2017. And I worked with them from 2017 to earlier this year to integrate the brand into their portfolio and scale it. And over those 3 years, because I had the support of, you know, a much larger company, I had a little bit of time to sort of breathe. As you guys know, like being in your own business, like it can be quite suffocating.
It's rare. And coming up for air is a rare thing.
It feels like you're in a hamster wheel. So once I had like, you know, an opportunity to kind of even just like take a beat, one beat, I just started thinking about what was next. And it became pretty, not apparent, but similar, like you read about in any kind of academic theory about this, there is a personality conflict between entrepreneurial types and big corporations. And that's not meant to be like negative. It's mainly just learning about myself over the course of 3 years and what I wanted next and what was going to be challenging and really not knowing, because Oni's was my first baby and will always be my first baby and was so much a part of my professional identity, but also my personal identity.
Right. When you own a business, you become the business.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's a separation between Amore Amargo and Southern Teague.
No.
not in my eyes and frankly not in the consumer's eyes. I am that place is me. Like Yeah, it's
sure.
hard to. It's so yeah, you are Omis.
Yeah. So
and then now you've pivoted. So what are we now?
Exactly. So I just think, you know, it took 3 years to figure it out, and I have far from figured it out, but I figured out what I want to do for now, and sort of get my hands dirty with a non-alc. Again, just like a little bit of an amalgamation of like balancing who I am, which is like one half loves bars and restaurants and food and booze, and the other half like tries to balance that with like health, wellness, better for you products. So things I was consuming on the one half of like health and wellness all throughout the past 8 years, from, you know, trends in herbal medicine to functional beverages to, you know, kombucha, coconut, all of these things. I was just kind of watching what was happening, and most recently came to learn about adaptogens and herbal medicine and those kind of ingredients being used in non-alcoholic beverages. And I was intrigued about it and thinking about it, taking a lot of thought over the past couple of years to kind of just bottle my other essence, the other essence of my personality sort of in a can, which again, inspired by my hometown, which is Rockaway Beach, Queens, which is such a unique place because it's a city. It's a city beach. It's a beach on the Atlantic Ocean in New York City. So it's where the streets meet the beach, and it's really a one of a kind place. And also, you know, using these ingredients that were kind of are on the up and up to create a functional aspect to these sparkling waters, sparkling beverages, seltzers, what have you, that are in the better for you category. So I like to think of the mission as like, I call it a dual by dual mission, dually functional. So it's dually functional in the fact that it's better for you. Two of the SKUs are every day, like anti-inflammatory, anti-immunity, all natural energy, you know, anti-anxiety. So health and wellness. It's also better. It's also functional because it goes towards saving the ocean. So as a member of 1% for the Planet, 1% of our gross sales go to Surfrider NYC, which is the local chapter of Surfrider, and they combat climate change, they mitigate plastic pollution, all the things for the ocean, again, tying back to our hometown, and then dually accessible. So it's accessible from both a flavor profile and a price point. I felt a lot of the beverages in the category were super niche from a flavor profile and also inaccessible to a wider audience from a price point. So that's kind of like where I'm going after the market opportunity. And again, this all sort of started as a passion project, something to do on the side. And as it's come to life, it's become more and more exciting to me, and I think that there's a tremendous opportunity. So I'm excited to kind of see where it goes.
Well, that's one of the most exciting things about a passion project is if, you know, once you get into it and once you hit a groove and once you find that, you know, it's not just something that you're pouring effort into and not getting anything back out of, but that there's almost this like it feels like being in a canoe on a river, and like all of a sudden the water starts moving faster and faster and faster, and there's a sense that you're just kind of like this thing that you're on is being pulled by all these other forces that want it and want to enjoy it along with you, you know?
Totally. And I didn't see it coming, to be honest. I mean, again, doing this in the midst of the wildest year, I didn't foresee this like fire in my soul again. It's been a feeling that I haven't had in a while, to be honest, you know, since starting Onis. And like starting Onis, driven by the vision, was in the hamster wheel, you know, working myself towards executing that vision, then got a partner, was a little bit relieved, or a lot of it relieved, in terms of like you know, everyday hustle, had a bit of a cushion there. And so, you know, long story short, it's exciting to have that, like, that drive and excite, you know, passion again for something.
Yeah. Talk about some of the sort of R&D side. How did you get to these flavors? And then talk about maybe some of the differences between dealing with you know, alcohol and how probably, I'm guessing, much easier it is to deal with non-alcohol.
Yeah, for sure. So from the, you know, recipe development, formulation perspective, I coincidentally enough, again, small world or just like sort of putting yourself out there for a while, a good friend of mine from high school and college was in the beer business. He had a mobile canning line for craft breweries, and he turned it into a more permanent co-packing facility upstate in Saratoga. And he's doing just, and we've just been in touch as friends over the years. You know, he cans a lot of non-alc and also some canned cocktails up there, which is super cool. And he connected me with a guy he works with semi-regularly, who's a consultant in the industry. So he was nice enough to, you know, help me bring the vision to life from a recipe perspective. So I knew sort of some of the adaptogen and the adaptogenic herb and the ingredients that produce like functional benefits that I wanted to use. So we started with those and like what they do for the body. And then we kind of started with those flavor profiles. And honestly, a lot of the like actual juices and overall flavor profiles of each of the cans comes from my experience with beverages and rum specifically in terms of cocktail development. So
sure, like go with what you know.
pineapple gin. We knew we wanted to use the health benefits of ginger. And I know from making rum cocktails, pineapple goes with ginger. People like that. I know it's sold on cocktail menus. So, you know, and it's also my own flavor profile, like my own palate, what I personally like, which is a huge risk. This was the same thing with Oni's, right? Like I made a rum by myself to my taste, hoping somebody else might like it. So it, in a way I'm doing that again. But I did have the consultation services of somebody else. So part functional, part what I think the consumer will ultimately like, a little bit influenced by a beachy vibe with pineapple, watermelon, guava, blueberry for the berry hibiscus. You know, obviously blueberries are very functional fruits.
Who did you, or is this just knowledge you already had, or who did you consult with to find out the aptogenic qualities? Adaptogenic qualities in these various fruits and herbs?
It was just something I had been following personally for a while, in like herbal medicine and, you know, other beverages that I had been observing. And then I did work with this, consulting agency called the Guard Agency. It's basically a one man, band, and has plentiful experience in back office ops and flavor development for a number of beverages out there in the market. So him and his flavor house helped me with, you know, finalizing all of those things. And a lot of these herbs and, you know, ingredients are still just becoming known in the marketplace to a smaller consumer. So hopefully we're just at the beginning of kind of iterating on these.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, one of the questions I was going to ask you in this interview was, you know, what prompted the shift from making a very high, you know, I mean, not like rocket fuel, but you know, it's not beer, it's a distilled spirit, so it's pretty high ABV, to something that is totally non-alcoholic. But listening to you talk, it makes perfect sense. I feel like I don't need to ask the question anymore, because you know, you were talking about being in this very competitive, very kind of like head down, you know, work every day thing to make realize your vision with Oni's. And, you know, I'm looking at your website for Rockaway right now, and I feel like I'm at the beach. Like, it's very much kind of focusing on taking a step back and focusing on putting stuff into your body that's going to be good for it and relaxing and restorative. And it seems like that sort of mimics your the trajectory that your life has taken in the beverage world.
Right. And to be honest, like, you know, again, back to balance. These adaptogenic herbs like help balance your body and like try and achieve, in theory, you know, homeostasis on like a, you know, variety of levels. But like that also just goes back to like my personality of like, okay, like I'm drinking a coastal immunity right now, and like you know, in an hour or two, I'm going to have a glass of wine, you know? So it's kind of just like trying to weigh out like what's going on in your body and, you know, in your mind. And these also, by the way, make really good mixers. so, you know, it's a pivot for sure out of alcohol, but like, I'm never going to say I'm never getting back into alcohol at some point. But it's been really cool. Again, I think Souther, you were asking this a few minutes ago, just to, from a business perspective, to be out of the liquor game has been, and it's only been 3 or 4 weeks and we're only digital right now and we're, you know, lined up for traditional retail distribution January 1, at least in New York City Metro and Long Island. But, you know, it feels already that you can touch the consumer a lot easier. Just because I can sell direct, I can sell through my website, I can make a wholesale price for this account and make a different one for that account and make deals that are legal and like not just sort of blindly sell pallets into a distributor, not get any information from the liquor distributor, not really understand where those bottles are going and how they're being used. And like, at least for now, I mean, we're in the nascent stages with Rockaway, but like just it already feels like there's just so much more control over like where the cans are going, how much money you're spending behind each activation, so on and so forth. Within, you know, within liquor, there's so much regulation. It's just really,
well,
really
so much regulation
to do that.
So much regulation and so many different regulations depending on where you are. I assume that non-alc is the same in New York as it is in Iowa, as it is in Texas, right?
For sure.
Whereas that's simply not true with alcoholic beverages. There are rules, there are ABV requirements, where you can and where you can't sell, how you can distribute, all the things you just said, what you can and can't give to people. You can't give them different prices. Dealing with distributors, if they don't know about your product, they're not going to be inclined to push it. But, you know, these are products that kind of push themselves in a strange way, or you can push them harder without, I just see it being so much easier to get the product in front of people, you know, lower bar of entry for purchasing price. Like, there's just so much opportunity.
Right. Like, you know, we have a small distributor lined up for January, for example, in New York, and they cover, I don't know, let's say 500 accounts. But that doesn't preclude me from like also signing on with like a beer distributor or a liquor distributor, as we said, like mixers or like alternatives to booze in the on-prem. Like, it doesn't, there is no exclusivity. I can also sell direct from my website. There are just multiple avenues for distribution and sales, and like, so, which I think ultimately will make it more, maybe a potentially more competitive. There's like a little bit of a lower barrier to entry. But it also isn't playing with like the super, you know, big suppliers and big distributors that the liquor industry, you know, compromises.
Right. And then I think the second thing that's fascinating to me is that with Oni's, you came out with just the one mark, as you said, you're one SKU. But this you're launching with how many? Six?
Four.
Yeah. You've got it's just an easier path to market, so you can start off with more marks than I think you can with distilled products, right? At least a lot easier.
Like, when I first started doing like real research, when I decided I wanted to get this off the ground, I was just like laughing almost. I'm like, wait, there are no rules about this?
Yeah.
Like, I was like working with consultants, and I was like, wait, are you tricking me? Like, am I gonna get like in trouble for this? And like all of this stuff, they're like, no, you can put this, that, the other thing. I'm like, what? So it's been an interesting ride so far, and it's like hasn't even started yet, really. So.
Right. So you mentioned you launched during COVID times, and what's your distribution like at this point, or has it really gotten out there at all yet?
It hasn't. So the plan was always like, again, I just kind of went with my vision for this year before it started falling apart, just stayed the course because I didn't know what else to do. And I was just like, let's just keep surrendering to whatever's happening. So the plan always was to launch online the last day of summer. So we did meet that goal, which was September 21st, again, sort of to complement the brand and the aesthetic and the inspiration of the home place, of the hometown. And to just stay digital for the end of the year, obviously, like similarly to liquor, you know, October, you know, OND, October, November, December, no one's really doing anything, right? It's like everything's in place and whatever's been distributed is just getting reorders. No one's looking at new products. So the plan was always to distribute digitally and sell digitally and try and trial and get some feedback from the consumer through online sales to see if things needed to be tweaked. And then, you know, work towards tweaking them for 2021 and also line up traditional up and down the street retail distribution, which we have done, as I mentioned, for January, and just solely focus on New York and sort of getting as deep, as wide and as deep as possible here. But of course, like, consumer behavior has changed a lot. So, you know, a lot of the traditional ways of like launching a brand are not available in terms of like similar to liquor and like a lot of product, you know, consumable products like event sponsorships, activations, even like in-store samplings. People are running in, grabbing trusted brands and running out. So, you know, a lot of those, even like sales calls aren't being done traditionally. So, you know, we have this distribution lined up for January and we're just going to kind of roll with the punches. And I think this time around with like running a business, I'm going to try to the extent possible just to be a little bit more nimble, which is going to be just by nature of how this business model is working so far is going to be a bit easier than with Oni's, because like with Oni's I had a physical distillery and a plant to run and manufacture. With this, I've outsourced a lot of it to like agencies, so you can sort of dial back spend or, you know, pump gas into some avenues and try to pivot with what the outside world is telling us.
Right. And I feel like so many more opportunities for that with non-alcoholic, as we've talked about, so much more or so much less restrictive on how you do your business. So currently, I looked on your website, I got there through your Instagram page, which is Drink Rockaway, right, on Instagram?
Yeah.
And I see that I saw that on the website there's a shop button, and you ship everywhere in the United States, and you're even offering like a subscription. You want to talk about those things?
Yeah, so we're offering free shipping nationwide, so that's also one of the cool things. Like, we're available nationally off the bat, again, through the internet, but still, like, to get to that level in other markets is, like, impossible, you know.
No, it's literally impossible. No one launches that. You can't get something everywhere on day one. That's just not a thing.
Totally. So, you know, we – and also, to be quite frank with you – the online, the web store, I guess, is basically a means to get exposure and to generate trial. It's hard to see how scalable it's going to be. It costs a lot of money to ship heavy cans.
Yeah.
So in order to like get to the price, like we're at $2.49 a can, basically, at our what we suggest you buy, which is a 16-pack, $2.49 a can. That includes shipping. At retail, our suggested retail price, like in-store, will be $1.99. And we'll make more profit off the $1.99 can. So it's a volume game, ultimately. But also,
I assume you're playing the game to do what you said, to get it in front of people. Like, you're eating a little bit of the cost, lowering your margin pretty considerably, but to get it in the hands of someone in Cleveland, Ohio, or someone in, you know, I don't know, Des Moines, Iowa. I always pick on Des Moines. I don't know why. I've never been there.
I don't think you can now. I don't think they want
me there.
You said about them on their show.
I do throw a lot of shade at Des Moines. I don't know why. But you want to get these cans in front of people so that they can taste them. You're willing to take that hit in the beginning. And then an eventuality will be, you wouldn't be necessarily shipping directly from yourself. You'd say, hey, guy in Des Moines who used to order from me all the time, there's a store right next to you that carries it now.
100%. So in the interim, as we kind of grow that, I wanted to offer the digital consumers a monthly subscription because it gives them, it guarantees me volume, essentially. I mean, you could sign up for a monthly subscription and cancel it at any time. It doesn't lock you into anything, but it gives me visibility into volume and how many cans I'm going to sell. And again, it's more of a volume game than Oni's was. And it also like gives the consumer a discount for committing to, you know, 32 cans a month. And of course, like I'm thinking that is more like spread across multiple members or two, you know, a couple or a family each month. So just wanted to offer a variety. Again, the cool thing about this is like if no one's buying monthly subscriptions, I can take it off the website. So, or like already it makes sense. I think if I recall off the top of my head, like an 8-pack of any individual flavor winds up to be like $4 and change a can. And if you buy a 16-pack, it's $2.49. And really like, it doesn't make a difference to me what you buy. It just obvious because of the shipping costs. So obviously, you know, buying 16 cans at $2.49 is much better deal than $4.12 a can. And to me, it's the same. So. Yeah.
32 cans of delicious seltzer a month, that's just barely over one can a day. Like that's
If you're sharing it amongst like a household or a roommate situation or whatever, you know.
Or your neighbors. I mean, people are getting together and doing a lot of things together crazy during COVID, right?
For sure. And so what we've seen so far, like, and what I expected, because we were like 5 weeks into sales, is like most of the purchases have been combo packs where you get 4 cans of each variety. And I expected that people try them and then ultimately come back, or ideally come back and either continue just buying combo packs or decide, hey, I only like, all right, my favorite is the pineapple ginger. That's what I consume the most. I'll buy 16 of them or I'll get a monthly subscription of them.
Yeah, so, right. Pretty cool. Seltzer subscription from Rockaway.
Yeah.
So I already plugged your Instagram, Drink Rockaway, all one word on Instagram. You got any other, if anybody wanted to get a hold of you, is that the best way?
Yeah, I'm currently answering, you know, again, it's like the more things change, the more they stay the same. I'm currently answering all the direct messages there, but I'm also have my own personal Instagram handle, which is Bridget, BRIDGETC. Fertile, FIRTLE. You can get me there, or same name on LinkedIn. Fertile is a very rare name. I think my family's the only one in the country that has it, so you should be able to find me easily on any of those platforms.
Awesome. Well, this has been a pretty fascinating talk. Thanks for spending some time with us. It's great to hear that people are pivoting into things that are driving their passions, even during these pretty difficult times.
Yeah, it's I really appreciate being here. It's always like so fun to be on your show, and it's been a full circle experience. Now I look forward to the next time. You know,
I know.
Hopefully under better circumstances.
Yeah, we have to start another new company, and then we'll have you back on.
Yeah, that's all. It's pretty easy.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy to get on the show. No, we'll have you back on. We can have you in the studio and we can drink some of this pineapple ginger seltzer with some rum and have a piece of pizza. Like, you know, like.
That sounds fabulous.
Quote unquote normal life. if it ever resumes, you know, I'm to the place now where I'm curious if this is it. You know, is this as good as it gets?
You know what? It's
see, when Damon's not around, I'm the downer. He keeps me up. He's the silver lining. I'm the dark cloud.
These past like 2 weeks or even this week, it's like so dreary in New York City, and like there's a real chill in the air, and all I want to do is like cozy up to like a warm bar and have a cocktail and like
different days. Well, again, Bridget, it's really lovely having you on again, and wishing you all the greatest success. And you know, I think I'm gonna go on here and maybe subscribe to some seltzers, so I can drink some more interesting highballs. All throughout COVID, I've just been using my Soda Stream and whatever spirit I have, I've been keeping in the freezer and just making highballs, because you know, it's minimal effort to do that, because you know, I have water, I have ice in my freezer, and I've got the spirit, so you know, I don't have to have any juices or syrups or any weird stuff. So it's really gotten me through COVID. But this looks like a welcome change of taste and flavor, so I'll check them out.
Get some adaptogenics, man. You'll be the sun, you'll be the sunshiny one next time.
Oh, great. change my whole attitude.
And Souther, I'm definitely going to come and check out the new spot.
Oh yeah, please do.
I
know that my voice doesn't sound super excited like I would when I was opening other places, but it's because I'm not choosing to do this. I'm being forced to do it. And I'm quite nervous. I'm quite nervous about whether it's either going to sink us or swim us. And we're on the razor's edge. We're running out of money to finish the project, and we're hopefully getting it open by this Friday, and the weather's getting cold. So we're running out of time to do outdoor seating. So it's like racing two different clocks. It's quite nerve wracking, but come check it out. Come on down and check it out. I'll hide in the back so no one has to see me. Well, thanks so much again for being on the show and taking the time out of your day. Greg, why don't you take us out?
Sure, absolutely. Well, that is it for us here on the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. Go to heritageradionetwork.org to check out many more fine shows just like this one. But for now, especially this weekend, until we catch you next Wednesday, stay well, stay safe, and we will see you again. Thank you so much. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like. Tell your friends. And please, join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.